The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics, Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, Mythos.
When Hermione and Chloe read to you out of the ancient texts, daughter, did they ever read you a story about an island of men?
You really think there is an island of warriors in this ocean?
Oracle?
Batman, something big just came up. I mean that literally. An island just popped up out of nowhere.
Magic.
I hate magic.
Tonight, we set sail for Themyscira, where our weapons will taste blood.
Superman, you are possessed by Ares.
You ruined everything.
Who the hell died and made you queen, huh?
Come, Diana, puppet of Ares. One of us must die now.
I'm sorry, Mother.
Kill her!
No!
Now, the world will burn.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics.
From his Missouri farm, the boy traveled west. In his hand was a Navy Colt, given to him by Jesse James. By his side was an old mountain man named Preacher, who would teach him everything he needed to know to fight like the devil and die like a man. And in his heart was vengeance.
Who owns that horse out there? The one with the SJ brand.
I do.
Which way'd you ride in from?
The boy faced the two men, his right hand hanging loose by his side. His left hand was just inches from his left-hand gun.
Who wants to know, and why?
Pike's my name, and I say you came through my diggings yesterday and stole my dust.
And I say you're a liar.
You little pup. I think I'll shoot your ears off.
Why don't you try? Because I'm tired of listening to you shoot your mouth off.
I'll kill you for that.
Good God.
We'll be leaving now.
Wait a minute. What am I supposed to do with the body?
Bury him. Put on their headstones. I was right. They were wrong.
Who is that kid, Mountain Man?
You'd be advised to remember the name, boys. His name is Smoke. Smoke Jensen.
Don't miss William W. Johnstone's epic Western adventure series, Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man. Coming soon from Graphic Audio.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 15, Preacher's Pursuit. By William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Andy Clements, Peter Stray, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Ken Jackson, Johann Detweiler, Terrence Aselford, Kate Torrey, Dylan Lynch, and Bobby Aselford.
Ah, son of a bitch.
Preacher pressed his back against the gully's rock wall. He tightened his hands on the flintlock rifle he carried slantwise across his chest. He listened intently, trying to pick up the stealthy sounds of the man creeping up the gully after him. His side stung a little where a rifle ball had ripped his buckskin shirt and burned across his flesh. One of the two varmints that had tried to ambush him had already paid the ultimate price. He lay dead or dying on one of the slopes higher up, his guts torn open by a shot from Preacher's rifle. But his companion was still alive. He was the one trying to sneak up on Preacher now. A lucky shot aimed at Preacher and clipped the rawhide thong by which the powder horn was slung over Preacher's shoulder. It had skittered over the edge of a long drop, gone before he could even try to grab it. He had already emptied his rifle and both pistols while trading lead with the two would-be killers, so he couldn't reload now.
Well, shit. Only one way to go.
Preacher stepped off the edge of the cliff into thin air.
What the hell?
Preacher landed on a narrow ledge about a dozen feet below the rim with some hardy bushes growing on it. Once he had his balance, he began working his way quickly along the ledge. The cliff face jutted out above him, cutting him off from the other man's view. More importantly, the varmint couldn't get a shot at him from up there. The ledge angled down, and eventually, Preacher found himself at the bottom where a narrow creek twisted its way along the base of the cliff. He followed it and came to the gully. Preacher still had a hunting knife with a long, heavy, razor-sharp blade, and there was a crow tomahawk tucked behind his belt as well. He wasn't defenseless, not by a long shot. He didn't move for several minutes. The fella chasing him had to be wondering by now if Preacher had given him the slip.
Some bitch couldn't have gotten away. Maybe Jonah was right. Maybe he was wounded. I know he'd come along here, damn his hide.
The man stepped around the bend. Preacher swung his empty rifle. The man jerked his own rifle up. The man dropped his rifle and attacked Preacher. When Preacher slammed into the earth, he jolted the rifle out of his hands. He snatched his tomahawk from behind his belt and swung it. The man ducked and kicked out. The heel of his boot caught Preacher on the elbow, making Preacher's entire right arm go numb. The man grabbed Preacher's arm and twisted. Preacher aimed a knee at the man's groin. The man's hat came off. Long, fair hair flopped over his face. A mustache of the same shade drooped over his mouth. Preacher was more certain than ever now that he had never seen this varmint before in his life. The man drove his face at the side of Preacher's head. His mouth was wide open. Preacher knew what was coming next. The son of a bitch wanted to bite his ear off.
Hey, goddammit!
Preacher jerked his head to the side, avoiding the snapping teeth. He whipped it back the other way so that their skulls banged together. Preacher reached for his knife and closed his fingers around the leather-wrapped handle. The man let go of Preacher's other arm and drove the ball of his hand hard against Preacher's jaw. Preacher kneed the man again. Then he walloped him across the face with the brass ball that was at the end of the knife's grip. The blonde man heaved himself up off the ground, arching his back so the Preacher was thrown off to the side. The man was closer to the weapon he had dropped and got there before Preacher could stop. Grabbing the rifle, he lunged to his feet and swung around. The survival instinct took over then. Preacher still gripped the tomahawk in his left hand, but he was almost as deadly with his left hand as he was with his right.
Well, hell's fire.
And Preacher still had no earthly idea why the two varmints wanted him dead. The settlement had no name. It wasn't even much of a settlement, at least so far. And it would be just fine with Preacher if it stayed that way. First had come the trading post established by a pair of cousins, Corliss and Jerome Hart, who had been brought here to this beautiful valley in the shadow of the Rocky Mountains by Preacher. They had had some mishaps and adventures along the way, but things had finally settled down once they got there. Corliss Hart and his wife Deborah had even unofficially adopted the boy Jake, who had run away from his brute of a father in St. Louis and come along on the wagon train journey that had ended here. Another wagon train had followed close behind, bringing with it a handful of settlers and customers for the trading post, which was doing a brisk business even before the building that housed it was completed. Word of the trading post and tiny settlement had spread among the fur trappers and traders who made their living from the beavers and other animals in the mountains. There had been other trading posts out here far beyond the normal reach of civilization. One in almost the same spot as the Hart Cousins venture, in fact, some 20 years earlier, not long after Meriwether Lewis and William Clark returned from their epic journey to explore the Louisiana Purchase. None of those posts had lasted for more than a few years, though. Savage Indians, brutal weather, disease, something had always happened to either wipe out the businesses or send their owners fleeing back to civilization. Corliss and Jerome Hart swore that their trading post was gonna be different. They would stick it out, they said, come hell or high water. The fact that Preacher had befriended them during their journey west gave their claim some credence. Everybody west of the Mississippi and north of the Rio Grande knew Preacher, knew the sort of man he was. So the trappers came to the post, and so did the traders. Some of them had Injun wives, and they built a handful of cabins near the post, sturdy log cabins that reminded them of the homes they had left behind back east. Of course, not all the men wanted to be reminded of such things. Some of them had come west to get away from the unpleasantness back east. But the little no-name settlement grew anyway. A few of the trappers even went back to St. Louis and brought out their real wives, the ones they'd married in a church or a judge's chambers, instead of the ones they had just shared buffalo robes with in lodges made of hides. There had been a minister with that first wagon train, and as time went by, more missionaries showed up. Not black-robed Jesuits like the ones who had been some of the first white men to penetrate the vast Canadian wilderness and on across the border into the northern reaches of the United States. Nope, these missionaries were Baptists, and they brought their wives and even their children with them. Within a year, nigh on to 100 people lived within rifle shot of the Hart's trading post. It made Preacher's skin crawl to think about it. Having so many people around in St. Louis was bad enough, but he could handle it because he made the trip down the Missouri River only once or twice a year. But he visited the trading post more often than that. Whenever he did, he felt cramped, like he didn't have any elbow room. It seemed like there were too many folks breathing the mountain air. He might use it up, he figured, although that did seem unlikely when he looked at the vast blue arch of the sky above the mountain. Preacher could see the trading post and the settlement far below him as he rode through South Pass. The big sure-footed horse, named Horse, picked its way down the trail with ease. The shaggy, wolf-like cur Preacher had dubbed Dog bounded ahead. Preacher was leading three horses. His own pack horse, which carried his supplies and the load of pelts he had taken since his last visit to the trading post, and the two that belonged to the pair of dead bushwhackers. He had found the animals tied to a tree not far from the spot where the men had ambushed them, but there had been nothing in their belongings to tell him who they were or why they had tried to kill him. The would-be killers were lashed face down over their saddles. Preacher had thought seriously about leaving their carcasses for the wolves. Hell, he had even considered burying them, briefly. But in the end, he decided to bring them with him since he was less than a day's ride from the trading post, and the dry, cool, high country air helped keep dead varmints from rotting too fast. He wanted to see if anybody at the settlement recognized him. It took him almost an hour to make his way down from the pass to the broad, grassy park where the trading post was located. A stocky, round-faced boy of 11 grinned at him.
Hey, Preacher, what you got there?
A couple of skunks in human form, Jake. You ever seen either one of them before?
Nope, they're plumb strangers to me.
All right, come on over with me to the trading post.
Preacher rode toward the big log building that was the center of the community. Corliss and Jerome Hart's trading post was solidly built, with thick walls that have been notched out here and there to create plenty of rifle slots. In addition, a stockade fence made of vertical logs with sharpened tops had been erected around the place, with watchtowers at the corners and a parapet that ran inside it where defenders could stand and fire. The cousins had run into enough engine trouble on the way out here that they had built the post with fighting off attacks in mind. The double gates in the stockade fence stood open right now. Preacher glanced up and saw that all of the watchtowers were manned. If the sentries saw any sign of hostiles approaching, they would sound the alarm and the gates would be closed and barred before the engines could get there. Everyone in the settlement knew to listen, and if they heard the bell mounted on top of the trading post tolling, they knew it meant to get inside the wall as quickly as they could. All the settlers would gather there in case of trouble. Preacher rode through the gates and brought horse to a stop before the trading post, just as Corliss Hart stepped out onto the shaded porch.
Hello, Preacher. Didn't expect to see you back here quite this soon.
Well, I was lucky. Already got a good load of plews.
Preacher shifted horse to the side so that Corliss could see the other two saddle mounts and their grisly burden.
Got a load of something else, too.
Good Lord! Who's that?
You tell me. They tried to kill me this morning.
Well, that was a foolish mistake.
Corliss came down the steps from the porch and moved forward to get a closer look at the bodies.
I'm sorry, Preacher, but I've never seen them before. They look like pretty unsavory sorts, though.
I ain't any sort anymore except dead.
Jake, go inside and give Deborah a hand.
Corliss, I've seen dead folks before, you know.
You've seen too much in your life. Run along.
Aw, shoot.
Is that blood on your shirt? You're hurt, Preacher.
No, not to speak of. Just got a little hide scraped off where a rifle ball come too close for comfort. I already slapped a poultice on it. It'll be fine.
Deborah could take a look at it if you like.
No, it's all right.
Suit yourself. Anyway, you probably know as much about treating bullet wounds as anybody else in this part of the country.
Yeah, I've patched up a fair number of them on me and on other folks, too.
A short, slender, sandy-haired man wearing a thick canvas apron over his clothes bustled out onto the porch.
Preacher, what's this about dead men?
They tell no tales. I wish the hell they would, though. I'd kind of like to know why they wanted to kill me.
Corliss's cousin Jerome came down the steps.
I've never seen them before. Take a look, Jerome, and see if you recognize them.
I'm sure that if you don't know them, Corliss, then I wouldn't.
Oh, for goodness sake. They're dead. They can't hurt you.
Hart lifted the corpse's heads one after the other. Jerome paled as he looked at them.
I'm sorry, Preacher. I don't know them. I don't think they've ever been here.
Yeah, that's what I figured when Jake didn't recognize them. That Yunker keeps his eyes open.
Jake? You let Jake look at these cadavers?
Yeah.
Just then, Deborah Hart, her gently rounded belly starting to display that she was expecting, came outside and took her turn checking to see if she recognized the bushwhackers. It came as no surprise to Preacher that she didn't. Neither did Pete Carey, the stocky jack-of-all-trades who helped the Hart cousins run the trading post.
Well, Preacher, you seem to have drawn a blank. What are you going to do now?
Only one thing to do. Reckon I'll need to borrow a shovel.
You're going to bury them?
Yeah, I killed them. Guess I'll plant them.
Surely we can give you a hand with that. And Reverend Porter can say a prayer for their souls. Although I'm not sure they deserve it if they tried to murder you.
Well, that's for somebody else to sort out, not me. Once they're in the ground, I figure on selling that load of pelts to you fellas and the two extra horses, too. Then I might buy me a jug of whiskey. Hell, I figure this ain't the first time somebody's tried to kill me. And I got a real strong feeling it ain't gonna be the last.
By nightfall, the two men were buried. Reverend Thomas Porter had said the proper words over the graves, and Preacher had gotten a good meal, cooked on a stove in the trading post rather than over a campfire. Now, he sat in a barrel chair in a corner, his long buckskin-clad legs stretched out in front of him as he took an occasional sip from the earthenware jug he held. Several other trappers of his acquaintance sat with him, swapping Wendy's. Preacher was mostly silent, though, a frown on his face as he pondered what had happened. The attempt on his life still bothered him. Life on the frontier was fraught with enough dangers already. Even though the two strangers had been unsuccessful in their efforts to kill him, the very fact that they had tried told Preacher that somebody else could show up out of the blue and do likewise.
What do you think, Preacher?
The direct question from Bouchard shook Preacher out of his brooding.
What do we think about what?
Jock thinks there'll be real towns out here someday.
Aye, just like Glasgow or Edinburgh, with factories and shops and row after row of houses.
Oh, Lord, I hope not. If things ever start to get like that, why don't you just take me out and shoot me? Because I just don't want to see it.
Maybe that's why those fellows ambushed you. They were just trying to spare you from having to witness the ravages of civilization.
Yeah, I reckon.
The trapper Jock leaned forward.
You didn't ken why those scouts came after you, Preacher?
No, I don't have any idea. Maybe I had trouble with a friend of theirs in the past. They were trying to settle the score or something.
Corliss Hart came over.
Why don't you stay here at the trading post tonight, Preacher?
What, sleep with a roof over my head? No, I ain't in the habit of doing that very often. Hell, it ain't even been a year since I was last in St. Louis.
Next thing you ken, they'll be wanting to take a bath, Preacher.
No, I'm serious. Surely it would be safer staying here than camping somewhere in the area. Maybe those two men were the only ones who were after you, but you can't be sure of that.
Well, fella can't be sure of much of anything in this life. Gets up in the morning not knowing if he'll see the sun go down that evening. But worrying about that too much will drive him plumb out of his head if he ain't careful.
Well, the offer stands, if you're so inclined. Deborah and Jerome and I would be glad to have you as our guest.
Well, I'm obliged, Corliss. I truly am. But I reckon I'd have a hard time going to sleep without the stars up yonder looking down on me. Fact is, I'm a mite tired anyway, so I think I'll go on and find a place to lay my head.
Preacher walked out of the trading post, dangling the jug from his left hand. The thumb of his right hand was hooked behind his belt, not far from the butt of one of his pistols. Torches burned at the watchtowers and at intervals along the walls, casting their glow over the area outside the stockade. The gates were still open, but a couple of guards stood just outside them, keeping watch. Preacher paused on the porch to look out at the night. Dog lay on the porch a few feet away.
Moan, dog.
Preacher had already put horse away in the paddock adjacent to the stockade after dickering with Jerome over the load of pelts and the two horses. They had come to an agreement without much trouble. Now, Preacher knew he could have gotten more for the furs in St. Louis, but that would have meant going to St. Louis. The Harts paid him enough to take care of his simple needs right here. He planned to walk out into the trees that came right up to the edge of the settlement in places and find a good spot to spend the night. As he left the stockade, he nodded to the guards.
Might as well close them up for the night, boys. I don't think anybody else is leaving.
All right, Preacher. I'm sort of surprised you're not staying inside the walls tonight.
Why's that?
Well, I mean, since those fellas tried to kill you and all, not that I think you'd worry about that even for a second, Preacher.
Oh, forget about it, son. I ain't offended, but I ain't worried none neither.
The next morning, Preacher returned to the trading post to pick up horse. And as he led the stallion out of the paddock, Jake came up to him.
Are you going to take me with you this time, Preacher? I could be a big help to you.
Well, now, I don't know, Jake. You're a mighty big help to your ma and pa, I expect.
Corliss and Deborah ain't really my ma and pa, but I reckon you know that.
Yeah, indeed I do. But they've been taking care of you like you were their own youngin', and I reckon you sort of owe them for that, don't you? And with Deborah being in a family way, they're going to need even more help around here.
Yeah, but Preacher, there's going to be a teacher on the next wagon train heading this way. There's going to be a school here. You can't leave me to face that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jake. Maybe one of these days, but not quite yet.
Damn it! I was afraid you were going to say that. Am I going to have to run off again?
You do. I'll have to find you and tan your hide good, boy. That what you want?
All right. I guess I can give it a try, Preacher. But only if you promise me that one of these days I'll be your partner.
Yeah, well, all right. But I decide when you're ready to go with me. Deal?
Deal.
Preacher shook with the boy and then handed him the pack horse's reins.
Here, hold these while I mount up.
Preacher had already said his goodbyes to the Harts and to Pete Carey and Bouchard and Jock as well.
I'll be seeing you, son.
Preacher looked back once and saw Jake standing there just outside the walls, watching him ride away. He left the settlement behind him and worked his way up toward the pass. He was going back to the same area where he had been when the attempt on his life was made. He had traps there that still needed tending to, and he sure wasn't going to let what happened scare him off. When he reached the pass, he paused to look down into the valley at the settlement. Even though he didn't like the idea of civilization encroaching on the mountains, he had to admit to himself that he had grown fond of some of the folks down there. Corliss was a bit of a wastrel at times, and Deborah could be a mite bossy. And Jerome, he could be downright annoying. But they were good people, and they had demonstrated that on more than one occasion. And Jake, well, Jake was Jake. For good or bad, there was no other kid quite like him. And hell, Preacher liked quite a few of the other folks, too.
Well, maybe in the long run, civilization won't be such a bad thing after all. Get on, horse.
Oh, shit! Preacher looked up and saw massive boulders bounding down the slope like they were no more than pebbles. Preacher knew instantly that his only hope was to charge straight ahead. Horse was an ugly hammerheaded brute, but he had speed and strength and stamina to spare. The same couldn't be said for the pack horse, however.
God damn it, got the pack horse! Let her rip, you son of a gun!
Preacher glanced around and saw the dog was falling behind.
Come on, you shaggy varmint!
Dog lunged ahead, digging for all the speed he could muster. Two animals were Preacher's best friends in the world. He wasn't going to leave either one of them behind. He slowed horse slightly as dog drew close.
We'll make it together or we won't make it at all!
On they raced, until it seemed that the roar of the avalanche would be enough to crush him all by itself. The dust reached him and clogged the Preacher's mouth and nose and stung his eyes, until it seemed that the whole world was about to come crashing down on top of him. Then suddenly, they were in the clear as they broke out of the great swirling cloud.
You're the goddamn finest horse any man ever rode.
Preacher lifted his head and looked up toward the rim rock.
I guess it's possible that rock slide started on its own, and it's a coincidence that I happen to be traveling through the pass just now. Yeah, that's possible. But I don't believe it. Not for one son of a bitchin' second.
By the middle of the afternoon, Preacher reached the rim rock where the avalanche had started. Dog ran forward and sniffed the ground. Preacher dismounted. He left the reins dangling as he hunkered down and studied the place that interested Dog. He saw some pebbles that had been disturbed recently, so that their undersides now lay upward. And he knew the man who'd started the avalanche to try to kill him and walked along here.
Trail him, Dog.
Nose to the ground, Dog followed the command, leading Preacher away from the rim rock's edge. A few minutes later, they came to a place where fairly fresh droppings and the marks of steel-shod hooves on the rock told Preacher that three horses had waited here for a while.
More than likely three men. One to hold the horses, two to push a boulder over the edge and start the avalanche. And the dumb bastards didn't even try to hide the evidence that they'd been here. Of course, they must have assumed that they were going to kill me and no one would even follow them, but you're going to find out just how wrong they are about that.
Preacher followed the scratches on the rocks left by the horseshoes, and Dog stayed on the scent for good measure. The tracks led northwest through rugged but beautiful country. The men had dropped quickly from the heights of the pass to a long grass valley watered by a stream that sparkled in the sunlight as it flowed over a rocky bed. Preacher could tell that they'd been dawdling along. The
Yet another indication that they didn't think anybody could be following them. The sign also told Preacher that he was closing in on them. He might even catch up to him before nightfall.
But I'm not sure we want that dog. Might be easier to deal with them once they're camped for the night. Let them fill their bellies, maybe pass around a jug.
When Preacher figured he was no more than an hour behind him, he slowed down and maintained that distance.
Just be patient, old fella. We'll settle up with those varmints before much longer.
The sun dipped behind the mountains to the west, and night settled down quickly. Preacher waited until he spotted the tiny orange eye of a campfire, and then he steered for it, still taking his time. It didn't surprise him that the men had built a fire. He'd been able to tell from the trail they left that they were greenhorns. Still potentially dangerous, of course, but not as experienced in the ways of the frontier as some. When he was close enough to smell the wood smoke, Preacher dismounted and tied horse's reins loosely to a sapling. The stallion would be able to pull free if he needed to.
Stay here, horse. Come on, dog.
With dog at his side, Preacher moved through the night with an uncanny stealth practiced over many perilous years on the frontier.
Probably shit right in his pants.
The important thing is that he's dead. That's all that matters. Now give me that damn jug.
Get your damn hands off it. You've been hogging it all night.
The hell you say? I'll learn you to talk to me like that.
Oh, come on, Parker. What the hell? You can't just... Oh, shit, Parker, no!
You son of a bitch!
What the hell?
Preacher lunged to his feet and burst out of the brush surrounding the clearing where the camp was located. His keen eyes took in the scene instantly, noting the rocks and the logs scattered around that the men had been using for seats by the fire in the center of the clearing. One man lay on his back, his hands clawed at his chest, where blood bubbled and spurted between his fingers from a wound. He did not have long. The other two men were rolling around on the ground on the other side of the fire. The red light from the flames glittered on the knives they held. Each man was trying to bury his blade in the other one's body. That left only the one fella, who left his knife in the body of the man he had just killed and staggered to his feet. The man didn't seem to realize at first that Preacher was there. The man stiffened at the sound of dog and turned slowly, his eyes widening in horror as he realized who was standing there.
You didn't figure I'd let you get away with it, did you?
You can't be here. You're dead. You're dead.
Not hardly.
The man had blood on his shirt. Preacher figured he'd been nicked by that second shot, which must have been fired by the man who now had the knife in his chest. Even though Preacher hadn't seen it, he had a pretty good idea how the fight had played out. This fella, and the one on the other side of the fire, had argued over the jug, which lay broken near the flames. The survivor had whipped out a pistol and shot the man he was arguing with. Then the third varmint had shot this one, who wasn't wounded badly enough to stop him from pulling a knife and going after that third man.
Go away! You're supposed to be dead!
Preacher had never seen this man before. The two who had already died here were strangers to him as well.
Why'd you try to kill me? Talk, or I'll turn dog loose on you.
I swear, Preacher, I got nothing against you. I just wanted...
What he wanted would remain a mystery forever, because at that moment a crimson flood welled from his mouth and washed down over his chest.
Well, shit!
The man had been hit worse than he thought. The pistol ball must have done a lot of damage inside him, but the man's anger had allowed him to ignore it long enough for him to kill the fellow who had shot him. It had caught up with him in the end, though. About 5 miles to the north, an even larger campfire burned. 20 men were gathered around it. 4 more were posted around the camp, standing guard. The man who led this group had just enough experience on the frontier to know that such a fire might attract the attention of hostile Indians. He didn't believe that Redskins would attack such a large, well-armed group, but you could never tell with those savages. It was better to take precautions than to lose your hair. Not that he had very much hair to lose. Colin Fairfax sat by the fire, a beaver hat perched on his mostly bald head. He had regained some of the weight he'd lost during his long, harrowing trek back to St. Louis the year before, so that his face was no longer as gaunt and haggard as it had been when he'd returned. But his eyes were still haunted by the fear and torment he had gone through. He'd almost been killed by Injuns. He'd almost been caught by grizzly bears and wolves on more than one occasion. He'd almost starved, going without food for so long at times that the empty pain in his belly made him cry as he stumbled along. The sun had burned his skin, turned his nose and his lips raw, and terror had been his constant companion. Simply put, Colin Fairfax had gone through hell, and it was all Preacher's fault. Fairfax would never forget that awful trek back to St. Louis after Preacher killed his partner Skylar Mims and ruined their plans to steal the wagon train full of supplies that belonged to Corliss and Jerome Hart. Fairfax and Mims had been working for Shad Beaumont, the most powerful figure in St. Louis's criminal circles, and it was to Beaumont's mansion on the outskirts of the city that Fairfax had gone when he finally made it back, the only survivor from the group Beaumont had sent west. Everything Fairfax had gone through had left him filled with hatred for Preacher. So when Beaumont suggested that he return to the mountains and settle the score with the bastard, Fairfax had agreed, but not without a little hesitation. Part of him didn't want to face Preacher again, not after what had happened the first time. But an even larger part wanted revenge, and so Fairfax had said yes. Beaumont had agreed to supply more than 24 men to come along with him. Brutal, dangerous men who didn't mind killing. Now, Fairfax was smart enough to know that Beaumont had some other reason for wanting Preacher dead. Beaumont didn't really care about what had happened to Skylar. Fairfax figured that Beaumont had some other criminal enterprise in mind involving the area Preacher called home, and he didn't want the mountain man interfering with his plans. It didn't really matter either way to Fairfax. All he cared about was Preacher's death. Accordingly, when the group of men he'd led out here arrived in the vicinity of South Pass and the Hart Trading Post, Fairfax had sent out several groups of scouts to search for Preacher. They weren't supposed to try to kill him. They were just to determine his location and send someone to fetch Fairfax and the rest of the gang. Fairfax didn't want to take any chances on Preacher getting away again. He worried, though, that Beaumont might have put a bounty on Preacher's head without telling him about it. And he didn't know if the men with him could resist a temptation like that. A burly man named Sherwood came over to Fairfax and held out the jug he carried.
Want a snort, boss?
Sherwood was Fairfax's second in command, and even though he referred to Fairfax as boss, Fairfax knew the man didn't really respect him. Sherwood's real boss was Shad Beaumont. Fairfax had been put in charge of the expedition because he knew the country and he knew Preacher, but he was also smaller and weaker than the men who accompanied him. The only thing that really mattered to such men like these was power, either personal strength or the power that wealth and influence gave a man, as in the case of Shad Beaumont.
No, and I don't want the men getting drunk either. A man whose brain is muddled by whiskey stands a good chance of getting killed out here.
Nobody's gonna mess with us, boss. There are too many of us and we got too many guns.
Just tell him what I said.
You're the boss.
As he looked into the fire, Fairfax seemed to see a lean, bearded face there. A face that he despised.
You're gonna burn in hell, Preacher. You have my word on that.
With three dead men who couldn't tell him what he wanted to know, no trail to follow, and no supplies other than what he had in his saddlebags, Preacher decided to ride back to the trading post. Everybody there would be surprised to see him again so soon, but he needed to pick up more provisions. Luckily, he had some money left over from what Corliss Hart had paid him for his pelts. Preacher didn't even bother to take the bodies with him this time. He was sure that it would be like before. Nobody at the trading post would recognize the dead men. And since the drunken idiots had killed each other, He didn't feel any responsibility for burying them anyway. He'd left them for the scavengers. That was one thing about the mountains. A few months had passed, nobody would even know that the murderous bastards had ever been there. Preacher started back to the trading post in the morning, leading the three dead men's horses. It was around the middle of the day when he reached the pass. The avalanche had blocked part of the trail, but not all of it, so Preacher was able to ride through it without any trouble. He didn't see any sign of the unlucky pack horse, but the animal was completely buried under the rocks. When Preacher reached the other side, he was able to look down into the valley far below and see the buildings of the settlement. To his surprise, he saw a row of white dots lined up outside the stockade wall. After a moment, he realized that they were actually the canvas covers over the backs of the wagons in a wagon train. He hadn't heard anything about a wagon train coming, but there it was. He counted 14 wagons. From the top of the pass, it took him a little over an hour to make his way down to the valley floor. As he rode across the grassy plain toward the settlement, the covered wagons grew larger. He began to be able to make out details, like the people moving around the vehicles. He wondered if they planned to stay here or if they were bound for some place farther west. So far as Preacher knew, the Hart's Trading Post was the last outpost of civilization. But he was sure it wouldn't stay that way. There was always somebody who wanted to go farther, to extend the boundaries.
Preacher, I'm surprised to see you again so soon.
Corliss Hart greeted him again from the front porch of the trading post.
You just left yesterday. Where's your pack horse? Where did those other horses come from?
Lost the pack horse. You hear a rumbling noise yesterday morning a while after I left.
What happened?
Avalanche.
In the pass? My God, are you all right?
Well, me and dog and horse managed to stay out of its way. Pack horse wasn't so lucky. Lost him and all my supplies.
That's terrible. No wonder you came back. You've had so much bad luck, it almost seems like someone is out to get you, Preacher.
They are.
What do you mean?
Three men started that avalanche on purpose. They were trying to kill me, just like the two the day before.
Did you know any of them?
Nope. Also like the day before. The varmints were strangers to me. I didn't bring the bodies back with me this time. Didn't seem like there was any point to it.
You, killed them?
Well, believe it or not, they got in an argument and killed each other. I was just about to step into their camp and start asking them some questions, too.
Like why they were after you?
Yeah. Well, reckon I need to buy some more supplies. Hope you'd trade some more of those provisions for two of these horses. I'll need one to replace a pack horse.
I'll be happy to trade with you, Preacher. You know that. I'd give you the supplies even without the trade. You've done so much to help us.
Well, now, Jerome might not take kindly to you giving away the trading post stock. Anyway, let's just see how much these two horses will buy me.
Excuse me, Mr. Hart. I was wondering... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Preacher turned his head to look at the newcomer, and for a moment his breath stuck in his throat. Even though he liked pretty girls just as much as the next fella, normally the sight of one didn't affect him so strongly. Howsomever, this wasn't just any pretty girl standing in the door of the Hart's Trading Post. This was the most beautiful woman Preacher had seen in a long, long time. Maybe ever.
Oh, no. You go ahead and help the lady now, Corliss. You and me can talk later.
No, that's all right. Help this gentleman, Mr. Hart. I'm in no hurry. After all, I'm not going anywhere, am I?
Preacher took that to mean she was one of the new settlers who had arrived with the wagon train and meant to stay there. But a woman like her would be as out of place in this tiny frontier settlement as a boar hog in a fancy drawing room. She was tall. Not just tall for a woman, but enough so that she didn't have to tip her head back very far to look Preacher in the eye. She wore a dark green traveling outfit and had a hat of a matching shade on her short blonde curls, not a hair of which looked out of place in an elaborate arrangement that framed a lovely face with rich brown eyes and full lips.
Preacher knows what he needs, Miss Mallory, and he knows he can go ahead and help himself. What can I do for you?
Well, in that case, I was wondering if you have any tea. I brought a supply with me, of course, but the journey took longer than I expected, and I'm afraid I may run out.
Yes, I have some. Not a whole lot, but enough that I can sell you some.
Splendid. By the way, sir, I'm Laura Mallory.
Oh, well, they call me Preacher.
Surely that's not the name your parents gave you.
No, it's, Art. Well, Arthur.
I didn't know that.
That's because it ain't what it go by. I'm mighty pleased and honored to make your acquaintance, ma'am.
The pleasure is all mine, Mr. Preacher.
Just Preacher, ma'am. That'll do fine.
All right, Preacher. I must admit, the name does seem to suit you. Are you a minister of the gospel as well as a fur trapper?
Oh, well, no, ma'am, not hardly. It's a long story involving a fellow I saw back in St. Louis and some Blackfoot who had it in their heads to torture me to death.
Good heavens! You'll have to tell it to me sometime. If it's not too horrifying, that is.
Well, it might be for a lady.
In that case, you'll have to tell it to me when I'm not feeling very ladylike.
I'll get you that tea, Miss Mallory.
You come out here to settle, Miss Mallory?
That's right. I came along with my brother, Clyde.
Oh, brother, yeah. Well, where's he?
Over there with the wagons.
Preacher turned to look and saw a man in a buckskin jacket and broad-brimmed hat bustling around, apparently supervising the unloading of goods from the wagons. Clyde Mallory also wore whipcord trousers and high-topped boots, and he packed a pistol on one hip and a sheathed knife on the other. In that outfit, and with his lean, weathered face, he looked more like a frontiersman than an expatriate Englishman.
Appears he brought a whole passel of supplies with him.
Indeed he did. Everything in the wagon train, in fact.
Your folks don't generally bring that much with them when they come out here to settle.
But that's not Clyde's intention. You see, this is the first trip of the Mallory Freight Line.
Oh, never heard of it before.
That's because Clyde has just established it. Several settlements have been established between here and St. Louis. Clyde intends to provide freight service for all of them, including this one, which is the westernmost settlement. As such, it will be one hub of the line, with St. Louis being the other. And I'll be staying here to keep an eye on Clyde's interests while he's gone on the long trips back and forth.
Is that right?
I assure you, sir, I'm up to the task. I've been well educated.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I reckon you're a whole lot better than me, more than likely. I mean, I'm sure you can handle the job.
You've gathered by now that Clyde and I aren't from around here.
Yes, ma'am.
Clyde is my father's second son, you see. You know about the law of primogeniture?
Yes, ma'am. I never made much sense of it, but I've known some fellas who come over here because of it.
Allow me to introduce you. Clyde! Clyde, over here, darling.
What is it, Laura? There's still a great deal to do, you know.
Yes, of course. But I wanted you to meet Preacher.
The local minister? I'm pleased to meet you, Reverend, but I must say...
No, dear. Not a preacher or the preacher. Simply Preacher.
It's what they call me. I'm mighty pleased to meet you. Your sister's been telling me about your plans to start a freight line running betwixt here and St. Louis.
Those are my intentions. We'll have to wait and see how things work out, of course. But I'm encouraged by the welcome we've received here.
Corliss and Jerome Hart came out onto the porch in time to hear Clyde's words.
We were certainly glad to see you, Mr. Mallory. Our stock shows signs of running low soon. One of us was going to have to go back to St. Louis, arrange for more supplies, and then bring them out here. Instead, you arrive unexpectedly with everything we'll need to keep us in business for 6 months or more.
It was a gamble, admittedly, but based on everything we heard back in St. Louis about what was happening out here, we felt it was worth the risk, didn't we, Laura?
Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Ah, is that my tea, Mr. Hart?
Call me Corliss. And yes, this is your tea. But I'm afraid this is all we have.
Oh, dear.
You can learn to drink coffee like a proper American. After all, that's what we are now.
We will always be citizens of the British Empire, Clyde. No matter what you say.
We'll discuss that another time, Laura. I have to get back to the wagons. It was a pleasure meeting you, sir.
Likewise.
Laura watched Clyde go and shook her head.
I apologize for my brother's behavior. Clyde's been rather short-tempered since he resigned his commission in the army.
Oh. Well, Corliss, I reckon I better start gathering those supplies if I'm going to put some miles behind me before nightfall.
You're leaving? But you just got here.
Oh, Preacher never stays around here for very long. He's too restless for that. Always on the move, eh, Preacher?
Yeah, I reckon.
But as Preacher thought about the fact that Laura Mallory was going to be here at the settlement in the future, he began to wonder if maybe it was about time he stopped being so fiddle-footed.